Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Debbie Downer Show. No, I'm just kidding. It's time for our friend, Miss Optimistic, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And, of course, Angie, we know on Tuesday they had the USDA report, and we'd like to put their what the real letters mean, but we can't because we're on national air. But in the meantime, what did you make of the overall report, and what's your take?
You know, to me, I had mentioned yesterday or Monday that I wouldn't have been surprised if the USDA were to increase yields. And of course, I got a lot of blowback at that point in time. You know, where do you get that from? What are you thinking? Yada, yada, yada. And simply just because we hadn't seen anything that I would call traumatic to the crop take place throughout the last part of August into the first half of this month. When I say traumatic to the crop, I mean we hadn't gotten wiped out by locusts or seen a significant frost or something of that nature. So, of course, the USDA trend, you know, recently in beans was to raise yields to give the grower the benefit of the doubt that, you know, maybe those August rains did everything that they needed to and more. You know, and then, of course, with corn, they raised corn, I think, you know, a 0.4 to half a bushel to the acre in the whole scheme of things, and a 14 billion bushel crop that's really not adding a whole lot to the bottom line. And I think that was kind of phoning it in, so to speak, on the corn side. And it wasn't a surprise on the bean side. You know, they did raise wheat a little bit from what I've seen so far. So that it's frustrating more than anything. Do I think that these yield estimates will stand when we get to January? Not really. I mean, of course, I'm waiting to see what develops in basis in the cash market as we move ahead, you know, because we really haven't gotten any October yield numbers come out yet that would show, you know, what actually is happening on the country. So we have a long way to go before we really know what crop size looks like. And you know, really when it comes down to it, today is a number put out by, you know, educated guesses and computer analog programs. And that's about it. I mean, I had a customer tell me that this morning, the report came out at noon Eastern, Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern, they called and asked for his, production numbers. So they were still putting numbers together 2 hours before the report. I mean, it just goes to the things that we've talked about before where you've got to use USDA reports as the outline, but the reality is the cash is the actual flesh that puts the skeleton on, you know, the overall supply and demand of you know, what's happening in the U.S. in general or globally, for that matter.
Well, I was on RFD TV at 9:45 Central, so an hour and 15 minutes before the report, and I said, look, I don't really care about the report. I don't look at the report. I watch the money.
Yeah.
And they've certainly had built in an extremely bearish number to begin with. I mean, I heard guys calling me panicking. Oh, I'm hearing there's like 172, 173, 175 in corn. I go, okay, that's the number. Yeah. That'll be the numbers. But I said, at the end of the day, I don't care where we go. They've already pretty much priced in a disaster. I mean, when you really think about it, and this is one of the things I do as a trader. I mean, obviously I'm not a farmer, so I don't own this stuff, and I'm not, you know, I didn't put up $1 million to get it done, right? But I go,
yeah.
At these prices, where are we going? I mean, can we go lower? Yeah, of course you can go lower. I've seen 318, but you know, I remember before ethanol got involved, you know, back in the 90s. Buying corn at $1.90. So if you price in the ethanol at $1.50, which I guess the number that they use, that's 340. Oh, here we are. So am I going to, I'm a buyer. I bought them after the report too. I bought 346s and I'm going to hold it.
Yeah.
I mean, again, am I wrong? Yeah. I could be wrong. I'm not saying it's not going to go down, but I don't believe in the numbers they put out anyways. Number one, number two, there's a lot of things that, as my dad used to say, there's a long road between here and Tipperary and anything can happen between now and then. Right. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. No, I agree 100%. I mean, I think the market's job right now is going to be to find the downside of that support. Would it have been nice to get a bullish report from the USDA? Sure, but it really wouldn't have changed the overall direction, you know, maybe aside from soybeans. But in soybeans, a two bushel to the acre adjustment is almost 40% of vending stocks. You know what I mean? Like it's a significant shift. But when you're looking at corn, you can take 7 bushel to the acre off from corn yields and still have a crop that is considered, you know, or still have ending stocks that are considered more than enough. 1.7 billion bushel worth of ending stocks if you look at a 163 bushel to the acre corn yield. So reality is, you know, right now, really, the USDA, like I said, is going to provide an outline as to where the market moves, but it really wasn't going. The USDA is not our savior. You know what I mean? It can't be our savior. And I say ours as the industry, the agricultural industry, you know, in the U.S. right now. We can't turn to the USDA and say, you know, save us, USDA, you're our only hope. You know, so many people went into Chip, the pro farmer, or the Farm Journal crop tour, expecting them to come in with this really ridiculously low yield and the market to turn on a dime. There's so many other pieces to this market puzzle right now that are really going to be, you know, they are going to take first step. I mean, they're going to take precedence. They're going to be in the forefront of people's minds, and that is, we have more than enough globally. You know, forget the fact, or they tend to forget the fact, that the bulk of those excessive, and I'm using air quotes here, excessive global stocks are sitting in the hands of the Chinese. The fact is that it reminds me of how lazy we got, or how we always assumed, you know, going back to like 2005, 2006, we always assumed we were going to have more than enough. You know, and then all of a sudden we found new sources of demand and saw a reduction in supply develop that just changed the whole entire face of the market. Well, guess what? Unfortunately, tomorrow we're not going to see this resurgence of you know, a new introduction of 5 billion bushel worth of corn demand like we did through ethanol. And you know, the reality is it takes a pretty major supply reduction to really generate, you know, any sort of interest. And the fact is right now we've got to find our downside. We've got to find where that support lies. I agree with you. It's in that 345 range. Maybe you have a risk towards 330, but
hold that thought. Cause we got more on this topic, but we are with our friend, Susie Sunshine, not Debbie Downer. She's Susie Sunshine today. And of course, Susie is being brought to you by BarkBox, and of course, getbarkbox.com. You get a free month and you can check it out. And she'll, Susie Sunshine, not Debbie Downer, will give you that that testimonial on how good they are because they use it. But in the meantime, we are with, obviously, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And of course, if you want to download the Bubba Show every day, which God forbid you shouldn't. I mean, you know, we got to get downloads. You go to libertytalk.fm and you can download the show every day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And we'll be back with more. And we'll come back with more from our friend, Susie Sunshine, Angie Setzer, after the break. And remember to check out BubbaTrading.com. You'll be able to find some great information there for you, and some of our upcoming webinars, which will help you become a better hedger, investor, whatever it is you're looking to do. So make sure you check that out, and don't forget about Bubba's Bottom Line, which is also available to you at BubbaTrading.com. We're going to step out here for a break. We'll be back with more on what's going on in the world of grains and agriculture after the break with our friend Angie Setzer. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. We're coming right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with Susie Sunshine, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of Grain Assistance Elevator. All right, so you were telling us about, we got to find about him. I think we found, I'm going to say they found about him. I'm going to say that I'm looking, and I said this on RFD as well. This has been one of my theses and my theory of this whole thing of looking for higher prices is that the equity markets, I think, are going to eventually sell off here, and that mm-hmm. money is going to be looking for a place to go as well. And I think new money mm-hmm. into the alternate space. So go ahead and finish your thought on you thinking finding the bottom and where do you think we can go from there then?
No, I agree. I mean, it's when it comes down to it, it's all about the money flow side of it, and what we've got. And like you said, the equity markets and things like that right now don't indicate that traders should be putting their money anywhere else because it's worked for them to buy on that side and it's worked for them to sell grains. So, you know, really, I think you're right in that 345 buy side. Like I said, worst case scenario, maybe we see a downside to 330. But right now, the market doesn't seem to want to move in that direction. And so on beans, I think maybe 925 on the November is our risk and upside still, I think is there, because I just don't see, production being there. But the problem is until we get an actual feel for what the physical pipeline looks like, it's all just, you know, hyperbole or hypothesis or educated guesses or computer generated algorithms, or, you know, you put the name here as to what it is. And we just have to continue to trade through that for now. We get the quarterly stocks number at the end of the month. You know, we'll see what that has to say. And then we'll get a look at what basis and spreads do as we work into the new crop year.
Okay. So now, look, this you may not be able to answer this, but I know you'll give it the old college try, though. But
of course,
I don't want to. This is Bubba's words, not Angie's words, because she's more involved, and they could come after her. But the USDA is a BS organization. You have to answer that. You can answer it later if you choose to. I say that their reports are garbage and they don't mean anything. And what I mean by that is that we don't really know what's out there. I mean, we know what they may or may not be growing. We know that we might be expecting X amount of bushels per acre in soybeans, wheat, and corn. Okay, but we don't know that that's going to be a final score yet. We're a long way from a final score. We don't know what's really in the bins, if there's any in the bins. Now, of course, you know, I tell my guys that, you know, hey, at these prices, I'm putting them in the bins. It's better than putting them in the bank. So I'm going to hold them, and I'm going to wait for that time, and I'll get out later, because if I have the money and I don't have to pay for storage, I'm willing to do that. So there's so many things that can happen between now and whenever, okay, that I can only really see in my mind higher prices because, again, I don't follow those reports. I mean, the truth of the matter is I don't even look at them, and I could care less. Because to me, it comes down to money, supply and demand, technical things that happens in a market and a chart. And if everything happens the way that we think it should happen, then we should see higher prices. I mean, why is corn so cheap? Why are the grains so cheap when the dollar is at two-year lows? It doesn't make sense. So that's why I say all this stuff to me means nothing. How about you?
No, I mean, I agree. That's what it gives us the range of trade or the likelihood of trade or whatever it may be in the short term. The reality, the only thing that I really pay attention to as a cash grain trader is what basis does, what spreads do, you know, and they tend to tell you that basis goes first. And so if basis gets worse, if the local market weakens, that tends to tell you there's too much supply for the local demand. And so then that gives you an indication that, hey, we did produce, you know, perhaps more than what we wanted to. And when it comes down to it, what the farmer receives locally, like a CFIA basis, and what the market offers when it comes to spread, whether it's carry or inversions or whatever that may be, you know, the market is telling you whether it wants grain now or later. Those are things that I pay more attention to than anything. So for me, you know, let's fast forward 4 weeks and look at what the interior basis values are doing, you know, throughout Illinois, along the river, in parts of Iowa, and I'll tell you if the crop's there or not, you know, in my opinion. And right now, this is just all noise, you know, and the thing is that people love noise. They want something that gives the market direction or gives us a reason for living or whatever it may be. And the reality is, it is just noise. And yes, you know, like I said, it's a skeleton that will continue to flesh out as we move ahead through the marketing year, you know, but there's been plenty of times where, everyone, you know, late August, mid-September has given us all of these reasons that the market needs to continue to go lower, only to see turnaround happen because money flow shifts and it's gotten cheap enough, you know, low prices here, low prices. And the reality is right now, the lower prices stay for longer, the less we are encouraging outside competition. So eventually we start to limit this expansion that we've been so afraid of in other areas, Brazil, Argentina, Russia, things of that nature. We start to limit some of that expansion, and then we start to see where the U.S. market is, and I believe 100% the U.S. market is the best, most reliable producer of the highest quality grains in the world. So as long as we're able to do that and do that competitively with the lower dollar, we are going to chew through these excessive stocks. You know, the hard part is, though, is that next year at this time, or next year, you know, come February, March timeframe, we're going to start to be debating on who needs more acres, and no one really does right now. So, you know, we do have a cap overall to what the market is capable of doing, but that doesn't mean that it has to continue to go lower, in my opinion. And so I think this is really just kind of, going back to it, noise, frustrating noise, but it's still just noise.
Well, it is noise, but that is one of the problems with investors, traders, farmers in general, is that we get too involved in what's happening with the noise around us, when the noise around us really doesn't have anything to do with what's going on in the market. And this has been proven time over time and again, because again, you can go back at any point in time and say, last July 4th, you know, a year ago, we had a major rally because everybody's worried about the weather. Well, of course, I guess we all got our meteorologist degrees and we decided that we knew more than the markets knew because we pushed them up so high that they could only go in one direction. And here we've pushed them down so low, I don't see anything. I think we can only go in the opposite direction of my folks. Look now, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that, you know, really right now we're going to see where the buyers return. And I think we'll find that they come in pretty soon, but it probably won't happen until we actually start to get genuine harvest reports. So we may have 2-3 weeks of just sitting here being bored, but reality is as we move ahead, you know, I think we're going to find that, as I said a couple of different times, you know, the cash market's going to point it out. But yeah, I think we're going to put in our lows here pretty soon. I think we have in wheat. I think 425 on the Dease is one of the lower numbers. Of course, I have concern that you could see, you know, in times of carry, sometimes you'll see the next month in line fall to where the former month went off or something of that nature. But, you know, I think we've put our lows in, and I think that we're going to find, and we already are starting to see it in wheat, where protein premiums have just absolutely went through the roof here as of late. You know, everyone said here a month and a half ago that we had no protein issues and that we had plenty of wheat available and there was no reason to be concerned about, you know, lack of wheat in a pipeline or something like that. And here we sit now, we're starting to see the proteins paid or the premiums paid for protein are starting to rise significantly, which is an indication that this idea that we have more than enough protein is actually pretty false, because now we're paying more for that quote unquote, you know, available supply. You don't pay more for something that's readily available. So that tells me that there's a lot of shortages out there that the cash market itself is going to start to uncover. And we've just got to work our way through it. It's, you know, just kind of work through that noise and start to move in the right direction here.
Well, I mean, again, obviously, you know, you and I think alike when it comes to this. There's always, you know, when nobody wants it, there's always too much supply. There's not enough to whatever you could name the excuses.
Yeah.
It's always there. But then when they want them, all of a sudden they find a reason. And of course, we'll have to have a reason to come back with Susie Sunshine after the break. This is Angie Setzer. Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains herself. And she's also the vice president of Grains at Citizen Elevator. She always graces our airways when we need to talk about the farmers and the grains. In the meantime, if you want to download the Bubba Show every single day, all you have to do is go to libertytalk.fm and you can download the Bubba Show as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And our brand new feature is a 5-minute recap of the markets every day done by video. You get to see my smiling face. You can get that at bubbatrading.com. About an hour after the markets close, you get a full recap from me. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out here for a break. We'll be back more with Angie Setzer, the goddess herself, right here on The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, The Bubba Show. We'll be right back. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report. Bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, the vice president of Grain Assistance Elevator. And some weeks, Debbie Downer. Other weeks, Susie Sunshine. And today, she'll be Susie Sunshine. All right, Sunshine. So I'm a little concerned about beans, though. You know, I thought 977 was a pretty good resistance. And if 925, I think it was your number, my number was 920, but they're close enough. If that doesn't hold, I think it could get kind of ugly. Any thought to that?
Yeah, I do worry about beans right now, but I do think the support is there. I really, you know, it's always so funny to me when people try to guess bean yields. A lot of farmers who have been doing this for years and years and years will tell you that there's nothing harder to estimate than a wheat or bean yield. And beans are even harder than wheat. I mean, wheat, you can at least see the head, you know, and see it's looking like. I mean, it's right there. It's like an ear of corn. Whereas with beans, you know, all you can do is count the pods, try to guess which pods are full, how full they are, et cetera, et cetera. And when the crop tour went out here a couple, 3 weeks ago, there was a great amount of talk about flat pods. So basically meaning that the pods that come on, you're counting them as potential production, but they don't actually have beans in them as of yet. You know, and so typically what you expect after that happens is you need to see good amount of rainfall and reasonable weather to finish the crop off. And eventually it'll turn and it'll fill those pots and you'll harvest and life will be good. Well, I would venture that a lot of folks are going to find that those flat pods that we had that we thought would fill didn't get the rain that was needed in order to fill them, you know. And so as we get out, you know, to me, I'm actually, and a lot of folks will probably laugh at this, because I think we will test the downside at 920, 925, but I'm actually long-term bullish beans yet. Brazil started out exceptionally dry. Obviously, their farmers are not in a huge hurry to sell, even though their exports have been huge. Chinese imports have remained very, very large. Those aren't going anywhere. Our beans remain competitive. I've watched harvest basis firm, you know, and like I said, the basis tends to be the indicator of where futures should go. I've watched harvest basis firm in the local market I trade in 15, 20 cents over the last couple weeks for us. You know, so I'm seeing that the crop isn't necessarily there as traders are anticipating. And I think even if we do bottom out at that 920, 925, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if farmers didn't have a chance to again sell beans at 975 to $10 futures as we work our way through the year and see, you know, the crop develop, get a feel for what was actually harvested and everything like that. I can't see us being as dry as what we've been to finish out the month of August and start the month of September across much of the Corn Belt and still have a 50 bushels to the acre soybean yield. But like I said, to be able to tell what soybean yield potential is virtually impossible, you know, from driving by a field. And even, you know, going out and pulling a plant and seeing pods at this point isn't necessarily telling you what that crop will produce. Now, I have heard some, well, they're better than expected conversations out there, but I always laugh because I never know whose expectation we're talking about. You know, are we talking about the seed guy, the farmer, the crop insurance? You know, who is telling us that they're better than expected? You know, what does that?
Are the
that
guys that want to buy them like, cheap, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what it's like. The husband, you know, saying that something was better than expected, and his wife just sitting there nodding with a knowing look on her face. You know, it's always one of those things where, you know, someone's opinion can vary greatly from someone else's. So until it goes back again, cash market, we've got to see what basis does, you know, what the spreads do, continue to see that export interest. I mean, we've had substantial new crop export interest here over the last week or so, 2 weeks. That's really, really improved in a lot of ways. And we have a lot of old crop sales that we rolled forward or that we continued to ship through the month of August, you know. So to me, yeah, I'm not really in that $8 bean camp. I think we establish a range, and it's probably going to be that $9.20, $9.25 up towards $10, you know, maybe $10.25, and that's what we trade until we get into next year and see what we, you know, do we have two oversupplied crops? You know what I mean? Does China back off? There, you know, there's a lot of concerns that could come into play, but knowing what we know right now, I'm not overly negative on bean price potential just because the demand remains, and I really don't know what to expect when it comes to actual supply levels.
Did you? Well, I know you know somebody who had called for $6 beans. Are they still calling for $6 beans?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't even seen. No. Well, I know one person is not. No, I would hope not.
Okay.
At least.
So now when does you talk about harvest? And for those who don't know, when is harvest? And basically, when is it all over?
November. Mid-November is when everything should be under cover.
Okay.
So we've got quite some time yet, but usually by mid-October, throughout the bulk of the Corn Belt is when you know what you have coming in. You know what I mean? Like that's typically you're 50-60% done by mid-October, and you know, we know what we have, and we start to move on from there. So we've got 4 weeks before we're even looking at being at the midpoint and having a genuine idea as to what to expect. Overall production wise.
And obviously that varies from state to state, from area to area, because,
yeah,
you know, obviously, you know, North Dakota typically will not yield the same as Iowa. So
no. And that's, yeah. And that goes back to you look at your local basis levels, local production values, or, you know, local pay values, stuff like that. And North Dakota, of course, tends to be a little bit later. Like in Michigan, like I said, we typically are still harvesting some corn over Thanksgiving time. But by then, you've done most of it. You know what to expect. You know, everyone knows what their yields look like, that sort of deal. It may not all be undercover, but the expectations or knowing what to expect are locked down.
So when do the grain farmers only, because obviously if you have cattle, you never get off, but if you're the grain,
yeah,
farmers only, when does their vacation start? When do they start chucking it in?
Usually about November, late November, first part of December is when everyone tends to, like I have, the speaking season starts again the first week of December. So that's how you know, that's the way I kind of look at it, when the farmer is on quote unquote vacation, unless he's moving beans or grain out of the bin at home or something like that. You tend to see that start about, like, it's the first week of December, and it runs through the end of March into April.
And that's the speaking season, we call it?
Yeah, that's what I call it anyway. That's when people start asking you to travel. Because then they're having the farmer programs, you know, we're having the top producer program, or I go to the Executive Women in Ag program the first week in December, and we speak there and stuff like that. So that's how I call it. Is that's when the farmer is ready to travel and see what the world has for him to offer.
Right.
Listen to a bunch of market analysts that he says are wrong anyway. Tell him what to expect in the market.
And of course, obviously, expectations are always interesting and usually shaded, but of course, I just kind of look at the model and I go, okay, this is what it looks like to me. This is what I think it's going to do. I'm not really concerned. Now, there's certain, obviously, certain price points, you know, like you hedged a bunch of your farmers at $4 in corn or over $4 and of course much higher in beans. And of course now they're sitting here wondering why they didn't do more. And of course that's always the issue. And I mean, isn't that really what you need to make sure people understand, is they need to at least take something off the table when it comes time?
Yeah, that's my biggest struggle right now is combating that idea that we have to sell everything at the highest price available. You know, that just tends to be the farmer plan, you know, and I'm not saying for everyone, but it is something that we have to really work hard against, is, you know, this idea that, you know, hey, I've got money on the table, but I might make more money if I wait a little bit longer, sort of deal. And you know, it's hard for a farmer, and we've had that conversation before about the bushel babies, you know, the emotional attachment that a farmer has to his production and trying to shake that loose and introduce option strategies if they want to see the upside. And, you know, and the biggest struggle is that so many people have so many different opinions. You know, you can sit in a room of market analysts or whatever and ask the same question, and you'll get, you know, however many analysts you have, you'll get that many different results or answers. And you know, me personally, I'm not a huge fan of puts for farmers just because the time value erodes and blah, blah, blah. Whereas a lot of people insist that, you know, that's how you lock a bottom in, sort of deal. And so, you know, you can't blame farmers sometimes even for being confused or not necessarily knowing what to expect overall, because, you know, no one knows what to expect overall. And so the only thing the farmer can control is if he's selling at a profit.
Right. And that's the key.
And even then he can't control that, because sometimes the market just doesn't give it to him.
Right. But if they get to the point where he's got a profit, he needs to take it. But we are with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and the vice president of grains at Systems Elevator. This is the Bubba Show. Make sure you go to LibertyTalk.fm and download the Bubba Show every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And don't forget our new aftermarket podcast, which will be every day available to you at BubbaTrading.com. You can get my thoughts on the daily market action. We're going to step out of here for a break and come back with more from our friend Angie Sunshine Debbie Setzer after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bob Hortz will be right back. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We are with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And Angie is brought to you by BarkBox. And of course, tell us about BarkBox real quick, Angie. Tell us how good it is.
It's fantastic. That's why Hank, our dog, loves BarkBox Day. He knows when it's his. They just send you an awesome package once a month of toys and treats and all kinds of good stuff, and the toys are of the best quality. So at first, I'm cheap. You know, I'm a trader, so I'm naturally cheap by practice. And I was like, it's hard to spend that kind of money. But once I saw the quality of the product they gave and how excited Hank was every month to get it, we've been a subscriber now for over 2 years.
So what you got to do is go to getbarkbox.com/thebubbashow. Again, that's getbarkbox.com/thebubbashow. You get a free month. Check it out. All right, my dear. So the grains that we talked about. Now, what about these meats? What do you see looking forward? I'm surprised that feeders have not performed better based on the price of corn. That, to me, is, again, not a logical equation. So what do you see there? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think feeders are struggling, you know, to really be influenced so heavily by corn, because the fats are struggling to keep up with what you've got going on, you know, on that side of trade. So you've had a really, really slow cash market start to develop. And the packer seems to be making more money than anyone in this whole entire setup right now. And beef demand obviously is still pretty exceptional. You know, maybe some folks were anticipating exports to China to just take off like, you know, a shot out of a cannon. I don't know why. Of course, we have different requirements that we have to fulfill, and it's going to take a couple years for us to really get to where we can readily supply that pipeline, you know, very easily. So we've got a little bit of a slow start there. But yeah, I mean, feeders, they've been good. A lot of folks have anticipated further upside. But I think you have some people out there right now that are looking at the prospect of losing, you know, a lot of money by buying feeders at current levels and looking at fats further out, that they're just not in a big hurry. I was really interested. You know, I had to travel down into Lincoln, Nebraska, last week, and we took the back way home. I'm the kind of person that if I have the ability to get off the highway and really see what's going on, you know, out there in God's country, I'm going to. And we drove by three or four different feedlots that were maybe half full. And so I was really surprised by that, just because, you know, you've been hearing stories of how many feeders are out there, you know, how full lots are. You've seen cattle on feed numbers come in kind of bearish and things like that. Well, you know, I think a lot of cattle guys have made the decision that no position is a position. You know, an empty lot is saying, hey, I'm not going to pay this for feeders if I'm going to lose money on fats. And right now the cash market's telling me I'm going to lose money on fats. So that's limited some of that buying interest. And then, of course, you go back to what we talked about before. Money flow in general has left the meat. You know, right now that game has played itself out, and until it's proven to be a solid investment all over again, I just don't think you're going to see that speculative money flow back into the market like we were seeing, you know, here even, you know, 3-4 months ago. That, and, you know, we really had that euphoric feeling after Trump was elected. You saw that in the meats. I mean, you can look back at a hog or a cattle chart and see, you know, late November, we really started to take right off with this idea that the U.S. economy was going to just absolutely explode in a good way. And we were going to have all of this free money floating around. Well, now we're finding that getting anything accomplished in Washington has been kind of difficult. And so I think some of that shine has faded as well. And, you know, maybe you haven't seen it disappear so much in the equity market, but in the protein sector, you've seen that kind of dissipate. And until we see a reason, you know, whether it's inflationary pressure or something of that nature to encourage buyers to come back in, we're kind of stuck. We're dealing with the same guys showing up for work every day and deciding whether they want to buy or sell, and really not encouraging much in the way of new interest.
Well, but you mentioned the feedlots are empty.
Yeah. You know,
there's a lot of reasons to believe we could be going higher. I mean, the formations look better. From a pricing standpoint. So, you know, again, I say you want to kind of be a buyer. I mean, we're not exactly, you know, we're not exactly at 240 feeders, right? We're at 140 or
no.
145.
Yeah.
Yeah. So could they go a little bit lower? Yeah. I mean, we saw fats last year got down to what I think 96 was the low. So are we closer to a bottom or to a top? And I think we're much closer to a bottom. And if any, you know, all I know is by the restaurants I go to, they haven't brought their prices down in beef. They keep raising them for whatever reason. Right?
Grocery stores. Yeah. You're not seeing grocery stores back off. And that's what I said. I mean, your Packer margins are phenomenal. You know, I think I heard someone say, you know, the other day it was probably some of the best Packer margins that we've seen in several years. So the problem's been is that the Packers have gotten used to buying this cheaper beef. You know, they're paying 105 or something like that in the Southern Plains. And so they're kind of sitting on their hands. People aren't looking to sell. They have this idea that this quote unquote wall of cattle is going to have to come. You know what I mean? It's, you can't put cattle in a bin. So you once you have them fattened up, you have to try to move them to the market. You can hold them off for a couple, 3 weeks. You know, I haven't seen, I don't think weights have increased. So we haven't gotten to that point yet. You know, so really right now we could see that develop to where the market starts to play chicken. You see a continuation of slow cash levels, you know, slow cash reports, slow cash sales, you know, and maybe here in the next couple of weeks, we start to see those cash values increase. You know, maybe your weights also go up. But if we could start to see some of that cash trade improvement, I think that would start to lead futures in the right direction as well. And then, of course, feeders could follow pretty easily. But right now, we're just kind of stuck here. And there's a lot of, like I said, there's just a lot of bearish feel overall in the marketplace, whether it's right or wrong.
Right. And again, I think it's probably wrong. And of course, it's always the case. But as we come to a close, so as we actually look back, we say that you're bullish grains pretty much across the board.
Yeah. I would say I think once we establish the low end here going into harvest, we'll find you know, a pretty reasonably solid trade. And most of my customers right now are waiting to get the opportunity again to sell some 390 March corn futures. And I think guys will easily be able to sell well over $4 for next year again. They just have to be patient.
If you're going to predict corn before the clock strikes 2018, what do you think that'd be the high price of corn between now and then?
I think that 390 March, 375 December corn will be back up towards the high. Maybe 395.
I say $4 December corn. How's that?
I will take it, and every customer I have will agree. not be sad with that. It's in the realm of possibility. We just got to see what harvest brings us.
That's correct. And what harvest brought us today was Susie Sunshine, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains. As always, thank you so much, my dear. I appreciate you being on.
Well, thanks for having me. I always enjoy it.
And that was our friend Angie Setzer from Citizens Grains, the vice president of Citizens Grains. And, of course, this is the Bubba Show. Make sure that you check out our brand new every day, Bubba's Bottom Line. Do a little five-minute recap of the markets every single day. So make sure that you check it out at BubbaTrading.com. In the meantime, don't forget about LibertyTalk.fm. You can download the Bubba Show every single day. And, of course, the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And tonight's football game, big tilt, Cincinnati at Houston. And we're going to take our pick will be Houston for the evening, +7. In the meantime, that'll do it for today. We'll see you back here tomorrow at the same time, same station. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We always appreciate having you aboard and look forward to talking to you once again tomorrow. That'll do it for today, everybody. See you tomorrow. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, have a great day, and we will be back tomorrow at the same time and the same station. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.